It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. And good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
All
right, what are we talking about today?
Well, first of all, glad to have you here today.
Good. Be in the studio, not to be the disembodied voice.
Yeah.
Right.
We are going to talk about guardianships and the interplay between guardianships and powers of attorney, and also the end game in a guardianship. There can be a restoration, by the way, of legal rights. Guardianships are sometimes, in fact, many times, not necessarily a permanent posture.
Right.
They can be temporary, and that might be a surprise to some of our listeners. And then some of the rights and responsibilities of the guardian, the different types of guardianships. There are more than one type. So I think that's what we might kind of demystify today, Ben.
Yeah, and guardianship is part of a kind of a multi-step process of a legal work.
It is, and you know, a lot of times we get questions about, you know, my parent or my loved one or whoever it might be is very forgetful and is, I think they're being taken advantage of. Someone has gotten their phone number and they're calling them and they're getting extracting money from them, or they can't keep up with their bills, you know. That's probably the most common type of guardianship scenario that we see, where we have a loved one that we may maybe think is a danger to him or herself or others, maybe wandering in the neighborhood, maybe got lost driving the vehicle. You know, that's the most common type situation where we're trying to rein that in, so that we're wanting to keep our loved one safe.
Right.
We're wanting to protect our loved one's assets. And you know, protect our loved one from you know, basically those vultures that are out there who are you know, kind of these days preying on elderly people,
unable to handle their affairs.
Right. You know, however, you know, guardianship, the law of guardianship in North Carolina really deals with a very broad spectrum as well. I mean, it could be a substance abuse type problem for someone who's, you know, relatively young. It could be, you know, a very early onset type of, you know, dementia type situation. You don't have to be in, you know, 70, 80, 90 years old to be subject to a guardianship and need a guardianship.
Special needs children that become adults.
It could be a disability. Right. That's right. It could be, you know, an accident, you know, where we're having to have someone put in place through the proper procedures under our statutes, our guardianship statutes, to protect the rights of this person who was injured and lost their capacity to handle affairs themselves. So again, very broad spectrum dealing with guardianship. We deal with guardianship on both sides, where in most cases we're representing the petitioner, who would be usually a family member who is concerned about their loved one. But sometimes we end up defending a guardianship where we're representing the respondent, the person who the petitioner thinks is incompetent.
Right.
And maybe the respondent says, well, hold on a second, I'm not incompetent.
Right.
Maybe you're trying to get your hands on my money, or maybe you're trying to get control of my life, but I'm doing just fine. I'm going to hire an attorney to protect my rights, you know, in this guardianship proceeding, so that, you know, obviously I have a defense, you know, and all the facts are set forth and put before the court.
Yes, it's more than one story here.
Exactly, exactly. So we get these questions a lot, and then we also get the question about, well, I have a power of attorney, so do I need a guardianship? What's the interplay between the two? And that gets very confusing to folks, because a lot of times the person who's named in the power of attorney, which, again, a power of attorney document is a document that, you know, the principal signs, indicating that I'm appointing this person to handle my essentially financial affairs in the event that they need to do so, or I can't do it myself. There could be different kinds of springing language in power of attorneys, powers of attorney. But you have to understand that the principal can revoke that power of attorney at any point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the agent in the power of attorney, the attorney in fact, that's the name of the agent, the person who's supposed to act, doesn't really have the right to override the decision-making of the principal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and many times we get into kind of a fight between the principal and the attorney in fact, where they don't see eye to eye anymore.
Right.
And then the attorney in fact then maybe comes to us or comes to an attorney and says, well, you know, mom or dad who named me as their attorney in fact is losing it. Just can't handle it anymore. Mm-hmm. What do I do? You know, the power of attorney isn't cutting it anymore. Well, that's when we end up in a guardianship posture, because once we go through the guardianship and the person is adjudicated incompetent, then the decision maker is no longer the parent under that scenario. The principal is then the guardian.
Right.
And that does override their rights.
Yeah.
But you have to go through that process.
And it's not as easily revoked, obviously. The respondent doesn't.
No. You have to. It's a whole full-blown court proceeding.
Yes.
Right.
And you have, but there's two phases of guardianship, right?
There is. When you file a guardianship, I mean, this is before the clerk of court. As mm-hmm. we talked about before, Ben, my goodness, the authority, the power of that office of the clerk of court in our various counties and districts mm-hmm. throughout North Carolina is incredible. I mean, the many different facets of the law that they have original jurisdiction over is very broad,
mm-hmm.
and they have, you know, a lot of power. One of those areas is relative to guardianship proceedings.
Right.
So you file a petition before the clerk of court, and it's really a document, about a 5 or 6 page document, this administrative office of the court type document.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of questions with regard to capacity, hygiene, mm-hmm. medications, finances, communications, all these type things that you include in your petition that you file. And you give notice to all the immediate family. So all of the immediate family is going to know that this petition has been filed.
Mm-hmm.
They have an opportunity to come forward to speak their piece at the hearing, so on and so forth. And that has to be served on the respondent directly, meaning the sheriff would have to hand it directly to the respondent.
Oh, okay.
Yep, yeah. Right.
And now this is the incompetency proceeding. Is that what you're talking about?
It's called a petition for adjudication of incompetence.
Right.
And appointment of a guardian.
Right.
So it's all in one document.
Right.
But you file that, and then it is a two-step process, mm-hmm. because the first issue is that we have to determine is whether the person is in fact incompetent, because we're not just going to start taking away people's rights, you know, to make decisions themselves,
mm-hmm. right,
unless, you know, they are adjudicated incompetent, meaning they don't have the ability, the capacity to make informed decisions for themselves, to protect themselves, to protect their assets, you know, those type things.
Mm-hmm.
So
once you get past that phase, the incompetency part, you have guardianship of the person and guardianship of
You can have a guardianship of the person or guardianship of the estate or mm-hmm. general guardian. If you have a guardian of the person, this is the individual who would make decisions about where the ward lives,
mm-hmm.
What doctor they see, you know, handles all aspects of their personal life,
mm-hmm.
and then guardian of the estate deals with all aspects of their financial life.
Right.
So that's somewhat. You know,
they don't have to be the same person.
Don't have to be.
Often,
many
are,
times they are, and that's a general guardian. But mm-hmm. those responsibilities are sometimes, you know, bifurcated there, so that, you know, you've got, you know, one hand dealing with the personal person and one hand with the estate.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, let's take a minute and just make it clear that. That 90% of the time mm-hmm. we're able to avoid this very important conversation that we're having today.
Right.
But as you can tell from Wes communicating with you, this can get very confusing very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And we are able to avoid all of this if we have a well-drafted, durable power of attorney, which legally appoints who we want to be in charge of our financial affairs,
mm-hmm.
and a health care power of attorney, which legally appoints who we want to be in charge of our person. That's kind of an odd thing to say, but who we want to decide where we would be hospitalized if we were in one of these tragic accidents, if we were to have an aneurysm or a stroke and we were unable to make a decision as to where we were cared for,
mm-hmm.
then this person would then be the guardian of our person. Now, it's important to say that although these documents go a long, long way in avoiding these court procedures, they are not, they do not trump the court procedure.
Right.
Anyone can come forward and say, well, I understand that you appointed daughter A to be the guardian of your person, and you now have had a stroke or aneurysm, you're dementia, or you're unable now to make, we have a file like this in our office right now, you are unable to make significant decisions about where you should reside, and you appointed your daughter mm-hmm. to be your agent under your health care power of attorney to be the guardian of your person, but in comes another sibling and says, well, but I think I can do it better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one who, you know, mama really wanted to be the one in charge.
Right.
Okay. Or sister is not doing as I think she should do. She's not at the facility that I think is in her best interest. And there then is an argument in the family, if mm-hmm. you will. And now, of course, there is a challenge to the legal document. The document, there are laws in the state of North Carolina that indicate that the clerk should be guided by the document.
Mm-hmm.
She or he should consider the document as evidence, but it is not completely controlling on the discretion of the clerk of court.
Well, in one of those areas, as you mentioned, though, is determining where a person lives. I mean,
that's the guardian of the person.
Right, but does health care power of attorney allow that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The health care power of attorney has a provision in it that says that if ever it were necessary for there to be a guardian of my person,
mm-hmm.
then I hereby direct that the person named herein as mm-hmm. my agent serve as the guardian of my person. That is a standard provision in the health care power of attorney.
Okay.
And, of course, in the durable power of attorney, the standard provision is should I be unable to take care of my property,
mm-hmm.
then this person named in the document should serve as the custodian, the guardian of my property.
You may have questions about this, and it's a good time to call in and get some advice over the radio about that, and also to make arrangements to call on the folks at Harvell and Collins as well. But if you'd like to call in a question, you can do so now.
You can call me at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law every Tuesday morning. They sponsor Let's Talk Legal, and we've been talking about guardianship in the proceedings there.
So, Ben, I'll finish up this little point and hand it back over to Wes. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the bottom line is, as I was saying, about 90% of the time, you know, we really are able to avoid these court proceedings
mm-hmm.
because folks have a power of attorney, durable power of attorney. They have a health care proxy. The family is in agreement that this is what these are the child and or children that are taking care of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good functioning families, you know, loving brothers and sisters. And there's just not a problem.
Right.
Okay. But unfortunately, that is not all of our factual scenarios. That's
mm-hmm.
not all of life, is it? And in those files where there is no document at all, then hey, you know, Houston, we've got a problem.
Yes, right.
Yeah, right. But, you know, when we're in the situation like I was talking about before, if mm-hmm. we have our elderly loved one who's being targeted,
mm-hmm.
you know, and my goodness, I see this more and more every day where, I don't know, you know, where these people get the elderly folks' phone numbers, but they call them and they tell them, you know, you want $1 million and you send us $2,500 and that'll take care of taxes and import fees and whatever else. and they send the $2,500 and they think they're going to get their $1 million, and it just, you know, they're
or the
just,
ones that troll the obituaries, and you know, somebody's right. passed away, and so they keep calling the surviving spouse.
This is just pervasive mm-hmm. today. So unfortunately, you know, a power of attorney alone is not going to allow, you know, the family members to stop that process.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the principal, the elderly person who's being taken advantage of, you know, really believes this, and they're more susceptible than the mm-hmm. average, you know, person in society, then they're just going to continue to be led down that primrose path, unfortunately. So a lot of times those type situations do end up in a guardianship to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Because under that type scenario, when we've had to bring a petition for adjudication of incompetence and appointment of a guardian, we almost always file for the appointment of an interim guardian, which we get a very quick hearing on, and then that allows us to have an emergency guardian put in place
right.
to then stop this process, to mm-hmm. step in the way, because there's an emergency situation. The person, the principal's you know, assets are being depleted as a result of these people taking advantage of them. So we can jump right in and stop that process.
And by that way, you can, like discovery, I mean, you can learn a whole lot more about
absolutely.
What's going on.
Absolutely. We can get to the point, usually when we have an interim order entered, we'll want some language in the order allowing us to get records, bank records,
mm-hmm.
You know, allowing us to get, you know, medical records as well, which is an important part of any guardianship, most guardianships anyway. So we can get some power right away to head off this type of devastating, you know, potentially devastating situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, the process is we file the petition. We have some decisions to make pretty early on when we file it. Are we wanting to seek an interim guardian? Are we wanting to ask for an MDE, which is a multidisciplinary evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an independent evaluation from a medical perspective to make a determination as to whether this person, what level of capacity the person has. And normally we're asking for this multidisciplinary evaluation in cases where we can't get the respondent to go to the doctor independently.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to force that situation. Now, if we already have access to medical records that indicate that there's, you know, Alzheimer's, severe dementia, lack of orientation, you know, some of the things that we look for in the medical records, then it may not be necessary to ask for that multidisciplinary evaluation. So, again, just some decisions we have to make with the help of the family at the outset of proceeding with the petition for adjudication of incompetence and appointment of a guardian. Now, once that's filed, the court then appoints a guardian ad litem.
Mm-hmm.
The guardian ad litem, of course, is an independent attorney who is appointed randomly to then represent the interest of
the
respondent,
all right.
the person that we think is incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
The guardian ad litem meets with the person, interviews the person. Usually, if I represent the petitioner, I'm talking with the guardian ad litem. What is your perception?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about this person? Do you think this person is competent, incompetent? What level of care do they need? Do they need guardian of the person, guardian of the estate,
mm-hmm.
general guardian? You know, normally we really try to work together there.
And the guardian ad litem works as the eyes and ears of the court.
That's
right?
correct.
Yeah. Yep.
But many times, the respondent is at the hearing that
mm-hmm.
we eventually get to, so the court would be able to inquire of the respondent, ask questions about, you know, just general things to make a determination, you know, independently as to what level of capacity the person has.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we do try to work with the guardian ad litem, and usually we see eye to eye, but you also have to realize that in many cases, when we're filing the petition before the court, we have not had the opportunity to ever meet the respondent yet.
Mm-hmm.
We've only met with the family.
Right.
And the family is telling us, you know, dad is wandering. Dad is over-medicating himself because he can't remember what pills to take.
Mm-hmm.
Dad is paying his light bill three times a month.
Right.
You know, because he can't keep up with it. You know, there's someone who keeps calling him and is trying to get him to send him money. You know, those
mm-hmm.
kind of things. So the attorney representing the petitioner normally doesn't have the opportunity to sit down with dad under this scenario and kind of make their own independent determination as to what level of capacity the person has.
Yeah.
And we may not ever get to see this person until we actually get to the hearing. But the guardian ad litem gets to see the person, interview the person pretty early on.
Right.
So not only is the guardian ad litem the eyes and ears of the court, it also somewhat eyes and ears for the petitioner's counsel, too.
All right. Well, there's more to come in a moment here with Harbell and Collins. And welcome back for a couple of minutes left here with Harbell and Collins. And you can go online at harbellandcollins.com and learn a lot there, and also contact them through the website.
Yeah, so you know, we're just kind of walking through the process of guardianship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some other decisions that we make. You do have the right to a jury on mm-hmm. the issue of whether the person's incompetent or not.
That can be appealed. The incompetency.
Yeah, it can
decision.
Be. It can be, and it would be a jury of six is how that is stated in the statute. We
mm-hmm.
normally don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to keep the expense down as much as possible, and you know, having a jury trial as opposed to a bench trial before. The clerk is
mm-hmm.
is more expensive. I mean, you're going through a voir dire process of
right.
selecting the best jurors and making sure no one who is on the jury panel knows any of the people who are involved, and so you get a you know an objective view of things with regard to the case. But that does add you know several hours of additional work that that can get expensive
mm-hmm.
you know, over time. So, you know, we're making a decision with regard to that. And, you know, we're just working our way up to this eventual hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And at the hearing, it's a two-step process that we're dealing with. First of all, whether the person is incompetent or not. And if the clerk makes the determination that the person is competent,
right,
then we don't get to the second step.
Mm-hmm.
But the second step would be, well, who's then going to be the guardian? And as Cecil was stating earlier, you know, we look at any documents that the ward had entered previously.
Because it expresses their desires.
Expresses desires. And,
yeah.
and a well-drafted power of attorney, for example, will indicate that in the event I'm adjudicated incompetent, then this is the person I want to be my guardian.
If you want to find out more, you want to call on folks at Harbell and Collins at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City at 252-726-9050. That's 726-9050.